Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to episode 389 of This Week in League. I'm Nate.
And I'm Jay.
And I am Glenn.
And this is our recap episode for round 5 of the 2021 NRL season. And what a glorious round of action it was. I mean, I didn't see many people complaining about PVL and his rules this week.
Wow.
The system clearly works.
PVL gladiator meme. Gif. Dot meme.
Without any further ado, unless you do any of you have anything you'd like to start with, or shall we just get straight into the games?
There's so much to be said about certain games.
Let's just get straight into it.
I am frothing to get to them.
Positively frothing.
In complete Thursday contrast night. To that, I want to get this shit over as quickly as possible, you pack of cunts.
I can't imagine why you would think that way. It's quite hurtful. And secondly, I'd just like to say that your game was the second last game of the weekend, so you've got fucking ages to stew before you get your turn, pal.
Fucking bring it on.
Let's stretch them out even more.
I'm happy to accept that venom coming from you, and it's probably preferable that you take your anger out on adults rather than on the small humans that live in your house.
Why,
just ask the child to shut the door. I don't understand what your problem is.
Well, the fact that they're locked in a segment of the house, you know, Jesus.
It was very unsettling audio broadcast to us right at the commencement of this video call.
Yeah.
When the camera was perhaps not turned on yet through design, but very harsh words was spoken to a young fella that's just had his birthday too.
Yeah. Like, if he wants to have his 8th birthday, he'll do well to fucking heed his father's words.
Like, he's in his room crying now, going, it's fucking bad enough he named me after a star sign. Now I'm fucking...
You know, that kid ain't crying, man.
He named me after a Paul Hogan wanker character.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh. I'm even copping flack for that name. I cop enough flack for the two names I didn't give him.
The roast has started. Let's get on to the games. The Rabbitohs, 35, defeat the Broncos, 6. And on Thursday night, first game of the round, the Rabbitohs, their 35 points came via tries to Benji Marshall, Adam Reynolds, Alex Johnson, a double to Latrell Mitchell and Campbell Graham, with 3 of 6 conversions to Reynolds, a penalty goal to Reynolds, a field goal, disrespectful field goal, I might add, to Latrell at the death, and the first ever in the history of the NRL, 2-point field goal for Adam Reynolds.
Double disrespect.
The double disrespect. Although it was a live-ish game at that point, I guess. The Broncos, for their part, they had a try to Jermaine Asako, who converted it for 6 points total.
Is that a DDFG?
What's that mean?
A double disrespect field goal.
Well, I mean, that took them to 18-6, didn't it?
It did.
So I feel like that's probably too early to call the disrespect.
Okay.
I mean, Latrell's, however, is at the last play of the game, 34-6 up. I mean, that's like all the hallmarks of the disrespect.
Okay.
And also disrespectful as well in the case that it wasn't probably one of their first two choice field goal kickers who took it and got it. So, I mean, so that's got, it's got so much more disrespect hallmarks attached to it now. Glenn, how'd you see this one?
I thought the Rabbitohs were pretty impressive. Their first 15 minutes really looked really sharp and slick, but to be fair, the Broncos didn't put up much more resistance than an opposed training run. They created so many opportunities, and the only knock on their performance, I guess, there was a couple of periods when the game was definitely done and dusted, that they sort of fell away and dropped away from the things that, you know, Wayne Bennett coach sides do so well. So that's probably unlikely to happen against better quality sides. But I think the Broncos have become a team that competes for at best 20, max 30 minutes per match, if that. And the drop off from that competitive patch is fairly dramatic. They, especially under any semblance of adversity, and worse still, there's a void of leadership. You know, I think Alex Glenn is probably that guy. They've made him the captain. He's the most experienced. He's an international, but he's just not the guy to drag those young blokes along, I don't feel.
No.
And the only other point I wanted to make in regards to Sias is that, you know, guys, you know, Benji did his things and, you know, copped some praise, and obviously Reynolds, Cook and Latrell, they'll get the raps, but Sias edge forwards, just Murray and Sua in particular, I just feel like that's their greatest strength, is those guys on the edges. Everything else they do through Cook and with the quick play the balls, and Walker off the back of that, and Reynolds, you know, having his kicking game, you know, having the time to put his kicking game together, and Latrell popping up, is it all flows off the back of those. It's really impressive when it's on.
It really was, I think, just such a stark example of a great halves pairing against an absolutely abysmal one. And by that I mean, if you look across all of the successful teams at the moment, there's a great duality in their halves, in that one's the organizer and the other one's, you know, playing more off the cuff, and be that Munster and Hughes down at Melbourne, be it Cleary and Luai at Penrith. South did a great job of showing Reynolds is obviously their organizer, and had a fucking cracking game as the organizer, especially with some allegedly tough conditions around his contract at the moment. And Benji just fit in and played exactly the right role as his offsider. Really, I think the only time that Brisbane got into this game is South went through this period where they seemed to be calling a lot of strips. And by that I mean they'd call something and then everyone would drop off the tackle so the one tackler could remain in and go for the one-on-one strip. But whether the Broncos were picking up on what the call was and reacting to it or whatever, it actually led to a few half breaks and some space in after some ineffective tackles. Apart from that, Milford doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't have a good understanding of how he needs to kick for territory. He doesn't have a good understanding of where to position himself on the fifth tackle, you know, i.e. not the cunt being tackled.
This is, like, unforgivable the way that and it's like, happens. Like, the fact that it happens at all.
It's three times
but,
in this game.
Yeah. But even it's that, just unbelievable.
Let's say it does happen. Dearden needs to be more aware as well. So when Milf goes down, he needs to come in and get into position so he's a viable option to pass to, so you don't end up with shit like Asako kicking on the last.
Mm.
You know, there's just too many really basic errors in that Brisbane team. But Glenn, I agree with you. The way South forwards performed, absolutely sensational.
It was one of the best games I've seen from Sua. Hey, I mean, he was fucking unstoppable.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
Get your thoughts. With all the talk about Milford and his contract and all the rest of it, would even moving him back to fullback, whether it's at the Broncos or another club, would even that save his career at this stage?
Maybe another club. I don't think Broncos.
I think he's cooked.
I think the Broncos have absolutely fucking ruined him because of this grand fucking scheme they had of somehow turning him into the next Darren Lockyer transplant fullback, switches to 5'8" kind of guy. And yet they, at no stage have they actually given him a fucking organising player in the halves to partner him, to let him be the guy that fucking runs loose.
Yeah.
At the Broncos, he can't be fixed. Now, I think he could be fixed if he went to, I'm just trying to think of a club that's got the fucking kind of conditions in place that could really do it. Like, as fullback, I just don't think in 2021 he's got what it takes to be a fullback anyway, even if he wanted to be.
Do you reckon in another 2 years, when Ash Taylor's playing like a, you know, regular dominant seven, would MILF partner him? Because that's what he needs. He needs an organizer who's going to control the territory, going to control where sets finish and start, and so he can just do some flashy shit. Who else has got Clean an organizing down. Seven without a proper buddy?
Put him down into put him down in the Dragons with Ben Hunt and Macca, and taking back in a time capsule to 2015 and see what happens.
Jesus Christ!
But yeah, like they have outright, like, I mean, like, I like to have, you know, have my fun with Milford and everything, you know, because he plays for the Broncos. But like, that club has dead set fucking ruined that guy.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah. And at the moment, he's not a better option at fullback for them than Asako.
No, fuck though.
No, I agree. I'm just thinking you've got a guy that's...
Asako's like the Dane Laurie of Brisbane.
Yeah.
But he's a million, you know, Milford's on this massive contract and
yeah,
needless to say, he's not going to sign the same contract again wherever he goes. But you'd want to get, if whatever you're paying him, you want to get the best out of a guy like that. Yeah. And it's just not happening at six.
On Twitter for that game, at Elroy McElroy 1. Said, hashtag fuck the Broncos, that is all. The Biggest Tiger said, 3 times disrespect. So there you go. 3 disrespectfuls. At Chevis Lachlan said, hashtag fuck the Broncos. That's it. At Jay Bartley 90 said, I'm no expert, but maybe, just maybe, Seabold wasn't the only issue at the club. Hashtag fuck the Broncos. It's pretty apparent that the board at that club has been way too involved in selections and club negotiations. But
so does this mean Seabold can coach, or we all agree that he can't coach?
Okay, two answers to that. I don't think anyone's getting success out of this roster.
Mm.
I still don't think Seabold is as great as people say. You know, remember, he did have success with that South team. Sure. And I will point out, just in the spirit of honest discussion, if you remember the year before he took over, South sent a letter out to their members apologising for their form, apologised for poorly adapting to the new rules and new style of the game, and admitted that they were in a rebuild year, and that it would be many, many years until they saw success again. Please stick with us.
Yeah.
And then Siebes comes along.
Yep.
You know, so, at Lambretta GP 1971 said, I wonder what the score would have been if South had decided to get into second gear. Yeah, that's true. Andrew in our Facebook group said, Benji Marshall, best player to touch a football. There you go. Josh. So between Lodge and TPJ, I reckon they may have the same IQ as an actual Bronco. Toto said, MILF running and being caught on the fifth. Who would have predicted it? Twill episode 387, that's who. And Jai said, I'm ashamed to own a Kia. Hashtag fuck the Broncos.
That's it?
That's it.
All right, so we move along to the first Friday game. The mighty Manly Seagulls 13 defeated the New Zealand Warriors 12.
Look at your little face.
Seagulls scored tries through Jason Saab and Josh Schuster. Reuben Garrick, 2 of 2 conversions, and the GOAT of clutch field goals, Daly Cherry Evans, with the decisive field goal. The Warriors tries to Ken Marmolo and Sean O'Sullivan. Cody Nikorima, 2 of 2 conversions.
All yours, man. Go for it, Nate.
Well, it was fantastic to get the win, like, first and foremost, especially in, like, such a pulsating contest between two sides at the peak of their powers, end-to-end stuff, and it was truly thrilling to watch as a spectator of, you know, even if I didn't have a vested interest in one of these sides.
I'm in physical pain.
Now... We were talking about, like, how this, like, people can bitch about the rules all they want, but it's a very fucking easy game if you don't make mistakes, forwards just make some fucking ground, you know, in between, you know, from 20 to 20 or, you know, whatever it is, get to a kick, pin him, and it's amazing when teams fucking do that. Isn't it amazing how simple the game looks and how good things look going forward just on, like, on the base, on the absolute base under nines shit that, you know, basic skills that players should be fucking learning. I mean, Cherry's fucking kicking game was on point. Did the fucking, it did the job. Pin, yeah, the Warriors weren't getting any easy meters out of there. The forwards, all of them were fucking, all of them were playing fucking possessed, especially like some of these, you know, gigantic fucking props we have that are finally starting to, like, you know, take a look in the mirror. They all have a touch of that T-Rex-itis where they don't realize how fucking enormous they are. And, you know, these 2 meter tall fucking guys. And, oh, what do you know, when they actually start fucking, when they actually realize and start playing like it, yeah, you're 2 meters tall, you can actually poke half of your body through the line and get your arm free and deliver a nice offload as well. And, you know, that sort of up. And then that leads to the next phase. And then you're the team getting the fucking restarts and so on and so on. And it just fucking, and it just works. I mean, they bombed about 3 tries in the first half. I mean, and that was clearly, you know, like the signs of just the desperation to fucking win and stuff not coming off. But then when it start, but then when things start moving, then things do start coming off. As it turns out, fucking Saab is really fast. I wasn't sure, man. We haven't really has had a chance to see him cut loose yet, but fuck, with that try he scored, he definitely, he gave a lot of start. And whoever it was, who was it, Malmolo, that he ended up fucking taking out? I mean,
yeah,
he probably had about 10 meters on him, although he did have to turn, but he beat him, like, to the point where he could slow right down and, like, take his time and make sure he planted the ball.
With the put, yeah,
down. So I'd like to, I mean,
he's faster than actual Saab.
He's actually, yeah, well, yeah, well, you know, but I mean, you know.
And more reliable. He went 90 metres without breaking down.
I put it to you that Russell Packer is faster than a regular Saab, real Saab. But it was just pleasing to, I mean, I think they really needed that win just like as a, you know, like an emotional sort of, you know, mental breakthrough. And now that, you know, they finally got a win in their last preseason game, preseason trial, season starts next week, and Tommy's back, and you know, and it's amazing when they actually fucking play with each other in, like, goal line defense as well, just how much of that shit is attitude. The exact same people on the field, exact same people on the field with a 100% difference in attitude, and look what fucking happens when you actually, you know, take some pride in, you know, in defending your line.
Is it worthwhile bringing Turbo back into a winning side?
Well,
if it's not broke, look, don't fix
I
it.
I wouldn't, but the fact is, I mean, we saw Dylan Walker got fingered to death by RTS, and unfortunately, he couldn't walk that off. I mean, he got his prostate milked so hard by RTS that it fucking pulled his hamstring. So
in stark contrast to what you've said,
so just an injury changeover, basically.
So what actually happened was that you beat one of the probable bottom four sides, 13 points to 12, in the most dour game of the entire season, including anything the Bulldogs have been involved in.
That's not true. Now
that's a big call.
In all of the Bulldogs games, it's been an absolute fucking tri-fest, and there's been highlight reels of opposition teams, admittedly, but highlight reels for days.
Look,
Manly still aids.
Manly would have had more highlights in this game, but the fact that Saab is so fast, I mean, you could only get fucking 10 seconds of that. I mean, you can't. I mean, it's the greatest try of the season, but it's like, just by virtue of his speed, it doesn't go any longer than it does, unfortunately. I expect to see plenty more of that going forward.
Let's see what the fans thought. Lee said, two frittata teams.
Glenn Zine's busting to say something.
Oh, are you? Do you have anything to say on that one, Glenn?
Who said that? I've said all I wanted to say about this game. The quicker Jay gets through the tweets and we move the fuck on, the better.
Lee said, two frittata teams that nobody gives a fuck about. That is correct. John said, rocks and diamonds, for fuck's sake. The Rocks and Diamonds Warriors certainly are back. Isaac said, Dylan Walker, injured getting dragged by the pants, try getting dragged by your hair. Yes.
He doesn't have those luscious titties to bounce off, though.
Jesus.
Super Grover said, Hopper just rubbed one out watching RTS make Walker his bitch. Andrew said, not only is that Manly's first win, that was the first time this season in 5 full games that Manly have even been in the lead.
Yeah, that's it. Well, we didn't lead twice. I mean, like, because we didn't score the first try in the game. And the final point, of course.
At P. Volandis Anon said, if you were the coach of an ordinary team, had $1 million to spend on only one player that would actually make that team competitive, surely Tuivasa Sheck would be the top of that list.
No.
Munster would be mine.
Yeah, well, I don't think so. And my response to that was, yeah, but how many field goals did he kick, though? Zero.
At the old Mish said, the only memorable moment in that game was when RTS hurt Dylan Walker's gooch with some sleight of hand.
There's a real theme in the tweets.
People love getting blokes. People love seeing blokes get fingered in the ass, don't they?
That's
just
it.
Captures the imagination of the casual rugby league fan.
Squint and Quarantino on Twitter said, the most un-Warriors side I've seen for a while. If you're going to be a super basic, complete your sets system team, you need to not make errors and win some games. Otherwise, you may as well play jungle ball, score some wanky worth tries and not make the eight. I don't know how I feel about that term.
I could, you know, when people, when you know, you say, you know, thing that people have a pass. He's got a pass. That's the artist formerly known as Mikey Smokes.
Okay.
A Kiwi living in France.
At McGugan's visuals, that highlight seeing Schuster's reaction after getting his first try. Low light, Manly getting their first win for the season. I hate them slightly more than I hate myself for being a Broncos supporter. Hashtag long time listener, first time tweeter. Welcome to the fucking airwaves, you degenerate.
Yeah, Glenn just dropped his kid down the stairs from the sound of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, my bad.
and it's...
Get back to bed, you little fuck.
And it's not what you meant when you said that after he was at four floors.
You done?
Yep.
Second Friday game. The Panthers 30, defeat the Raiders 10. And this one, where's the scorers? Load up, you bitch. There we are. The Panthers double to Charlie Staines. Nathan Cleary, Matt Burton and Jerome Luai tries. Cleary 5 of 5 conversions. The Raiders 10 came through tries to Whiten and Jared Croker. Croker 1 of 2 conversions. You go there, Jay.
Again, just to point out, the team that's currently leading the competition outright, looking down on all you fucking peasant cunts from above.
You really need your smoking jacket, mate.
Are doing it without their first choice hooker and their first choice fullback. So I don't want to hear anyone bitching about Volandi's ball or injuries or fatigue or things like that. Fucking deal with your setbacks. Stop bitching. Get on and deal with your setbacks. Have some depth. Have some goddamn depth. It wasn't that fucking tested because Crichton had an absolute shocking first half at fullback. He has absolute dicks for fingers and he doesn't understand where he should be positioned in defence. Jesus.
Yeah, but I mean, like
Christ.
A year ago, you could say, or 2 years ago, you could say that exact same sentence about Dylan Edwards. So
that is true.
So there's no, I'm not going to rule him out forever.
No, not forever.
How much fullback did Crichton play through the juniors?
Not a lot.
He's yeah.
Not a lot. I think it was like early high school was the last time he actually played.
Because his body type says centre every day of the week.
Yeah.
Just. Yeah. And Canberra were really smart. Like they targeted him with low balls.
Mm.
You know, obviously his height makes him very, very good in the air. But with that bouncing, rolling ball on the ground, he's going down a fair way for it and he struggled with a bunch of them. Isn't it nice, though, that when your makeshift fullback does have some errors, that you can deal with them, that the rest of them, you know, rally around? Because that's the difference, I think. Like, if you look at those teams when they start to get the yips and people start dropping balls, all of a sudden, it was like when Shibasaki started to drop balls, points came from it. Every single fucking time, points came from it. And that does your head in. If your mistake's covered up and there's no real repercussions for it, it's a lot easier to get over it and move on.
Mm.
And the effort put in by especially those forwards and just how fucking mobile they were, there's a lot to be said for, you know, obviously stats around what you do yourself, but also what stats you inflict on your opposition. You know, there's some massive debate, I don't know if you've read it all, going on in the NBA at the moment about what sort of player Benny Simmons is over with the Sixers. Yeah. And he's not an outstanding scorer and he's not doing a whole bunch of things that people say you should be doing. But if you look at the elite players that he guards, they have terrible nights every time he defends them. For the periods that he defends them, it's like they're fucking college players again.
Yep.
And for what Penrith's forwards held Canberra's forwards to, especially rep guys like Papali'i, you know, that's really, really indicative of where this team's going to get their victories from. From there, they were just fitter. They created more opportunities. They were faster. They were a step ahead. They were more enthusiastic about the ball, and that's where their points came from.
I think Canberra, like Canberra, started off really well, but I think they were, fucked over by the, you know, losing, you know, Nickel Klukstar.
Yep, 100%.
Who was certainly one of their most important players, and I don't think they really recovered from the reshuffle necessitated by his leaving the game.
Yeah, that's it. Almost like Penrith didn't have their first choice fullback.
They started with their first
any
choice
other
fullback that they have on the field at the moment.
You want to throw at me on behalf of your fucking cut Canberra friends? Please.
I don't have it.
I'll Viking clap
friends.
You.
None of us. If you none Dylan of us have
Edwards,
any Canberra friends.
Dylan Edwards. If you, yeah, no, no one's friends with Canberra.
Fuck
people.
Those guys.
Fucking, I mean, anyone who says up the mill dies alone. Dead set.
Sounds like a place you stick your Mars bars.
None will mourn their passing.
Up the milk.
I mean, up the milk is just, yeah, fuck the milk. That's it. Fuck your hashtag. Get it.
I think the gap between Penrith and the rest of the comp is at this stage of the season is fairly large, to say the least. And I'm copping a fair bit of heat.
Asterisk that with South though.
No, I don't, even including Souths. I mean, so I don't. I think the competition is Penrith to lose, and honestly, I can't see them losing. If they were to fail to make the grand final, or fail to achieve victory in the grand final this year, it would make Parramatta in like 2001 look like fucking, a fucking close fucking game or something. I don't know.
You're right. They probably are the greatest team of all time. I appreciate you saying so.
I was trying to make a serious point. You guys just fucking just sodomized it, as you do.
Yeah, it would be like the Patriots and they're going for that perfect season, you know, a decade ago, and they're going for the complete undefeated thing, and then the Super Bowl. Yeah, you'd hate to see that happen to the Panthers, to these young guys, but more not so much the young guys. I mean, players are professional; they can get over these sorts of things, but you'd hate to see it happen to their fans. Especially the, you know, the one we're talking to right now. I mean, it'd just be heartbreaking.
What?
I wouldn't wish it on a Tigers fan. let alone Jay.
I reckon Tigers fans would pay you for it.
Oh, I'd take it. I'd take losing two grand finals in a row at the moment. Fuck me dead, yeah.
Tweets.
The other observation I've made in regards to Penrith, they're obviously it's a bit of a transition between the way Penrith is viewed by the rest of the comp and the fan bases of teams, the rest of the teams in the comp, and how good they are. Because what they did last year, I don't think there was too many people that were looking down their nose at how good Penrith were and what they'd achieved and the run they went on. This year, there's a fair bit of pushback about Panthers. You know, there's a bit of talk about them being sore winners and stuff like that.
The poppies are tall this year.
The poppies are tall. You see what I'm saying?
However,
right?
there definitely are those things manifesting though as well. Like that shit with Tapane on the when he wasn't even on, he was off the field.
Yeah.
Down by the in-goal area, and then Crichton, it's one thing, yeah, you can have a laugh, and like, you know, but the way that Crichton roped him in, I had no problem with that. But then when he's like, yeah, right, and fucking goes to disengage, And then it's like, you know, oh no, we're fucking, yeah, we're keeping you in this situation. That's when it sort of goes over the top. I mean, I love the mocking of the Viking clap. Like that, I love it because, you know, as we always joke at the start of every episode when we're doing our clap to sync things up. I mean, like the Viking clap is a hilarious meme, and Canberra love it, but it's hilarious to everybody else.
You know, they called it on Twitter called it our tradition.
About 2018 it was, yeah.
I tweeted that, and the amount of fucking dumb fucks that came at me saying, you can't steal it from us. Because I threw a tweet out, and I was like, well, Penrith are doing the Viking clap. They're doing it better than Canberra. It's ours now. We own it. And people seriously thought that I thought Penrith were going to start doing it every game now.
And they went so fucking crazy when Ennis did it to him the other, you know.
So good.
And like, and so what that did, so Ennis, you know, and truly, like, you know, was, you know, one of the master fucking germ trolls in the game in recent history. He's just exposed their fan base and their players and their blind spot to the Viking clap. And so now I hope every fucking team does it.
Every team. To them.
Every single one.
Every
win or lose.
Could you imagine the implosion?
Every time you score a try against Canberra.
Fuck, there's going to be some angry rolls at Team Pant Anaconda.
That's it. On Twitter for that game, @MadDog_NoSpace, said Panthers fans that win the Viking clap all game was cool, but I bet they don't have the courage to bring out the rally towels next weekend because they are a coward as football team. Ooh. @Troy_79 said Panthers fans, hey, what a bunch of arrogant, disrespectful, cocky assholes. The team is no better, becoming quite full of themselves. Bad losers are one thing, but bad winners are worse. They're an awesome team to watch. Don't ruin it with arrogance.
Who's that @Karen?
It seemed like @David Attenborough.
Do you know who accuses people of being bad winners? Fucking losers. Now, Troy, you know I love you. Don't do yourself like this. What the fuck do you expect? You expect us to put a fucking romping on our original rival on the anniversary of the 91 grand final and just sit there quietly fucking golf clapping going, yes, gee whiz, I'm enjoying this performance mightily, but best not hurt any feelings, and she'll be sure to organise counselling for these green-jerseyed cunts. Up the milk, yes, up the milk. Fuck off.
Jam it up,
tell you
milk.
What, just meant... Speaking about that whole anniversary, I mean, how fucking good is it that in 2021 that the company Uber exists to get everyone safely home after their fucking game? You right, Glenn? I think he's dead. I think real dad just got finished.
If I did not
off.
Have a broken rib, I would crumple onto the floor.
How'd you break your rib? I forgot.
Plank.
Leo gave you a hook to the body, didn't he?
Fuck, I'd be in hospital if he hit me. Little fucker.
Oh, God. At X Shane Goodwin X.
Darkness.
Yes. He said...
He used to work with Shane. He's a good guy.
Oh, see? So this explains this bullshit. Most important thing is that Nate got a W tonight. I'm prepared to forego Panther celebration for poor old Nate. Fucking
Do
hell.
Do you think anyone's ever uttered those words before? Poor old God. Nate? Who's ever had sympathy for this piece of shit? Ever?
Fucking no one. I've had to do it tough since day
my
one.
Wife is the only
At... Zepled 69 said 2021, the year of Cleary without a doubt. James in our Facebook group. Now I'll put this one to you. I'm obviously for it. I fucking love it. Penrith haven't lost a game at home since 2019. I petition to rename Bluebet Stadium the Glory Hole.
Yeah, I'm all for it. All for it.
Fantastic.
Signed.
Hashtag chinners are winners.
The glory hole, okay, from henceforth, from Nathan now on.
Said, after analysing that game in depth, I can say that Burton is probably a better centre than Dylan Napa. Toto said, are the Panthers turning for a bunch of larrikin kids to arrogant fuckwits? Is the winning run getting to their head? Do they need a humble loss from a powerhouse club going through a rough patch to bring them down a peg or two? Only next week will tell. No. And Fat Harry Lazy said, at least Tommy doesn't have to watch the modern rugby league fight anymore. Hashtag RIP Tommy. Hashtag chins get the wins.
I need to standardise that one. What if it's going if it's going to be chinners or winners, or if it's going to be chins get the wins, just so the vote's not split when it counts at the end of the season.
It's just like us starting to do two eps a week. We're just multi-pronging that shit.
Right, okay, so we move on to Saturday, and the Gold Coast Titans 42 destroyed the Newcastle Knights 16. Titans tries to Proctor, a double to Herbert, double to smooth Corey Thompson, and a hat-trick to David Fifita. And Fogarty, 5 of 8 conversions. The Knights 16 came through tries to Randall, Ponga, and Stafford Toa, and Ponga 2 of 3 conversions. Glenn.
Yeah, the rot started pretty early in this one. I think Proctor scored after a minute, and they didn't really let up from there on. So the Titans, as you would expect, against a fairly undermanned Knights team, but they completely dominated, certainly through the forwards. I think Frizzell tried to play a bit of a lone hand, but even he was overwhelmed by what the Titans threw at them through the middle. And
I dare say he was the fucking start and finish of it all. I mean, he was the fucking highway through which the business of David Fifita Incorporated operated most of their heavy freight.
The Titans, they are getting to a point where they're starting to be dynamite on the edges, and it's a bit like I mentioned about Souths earlier. Although they don't really have the dummy half in their side to really capitalise to the same extent. But Proctor, Fifita, Tino, those guys. But Proctor's not going to get the raps of those younger blokes, but he's so important to what the Titans do, and you can see that the younger guys, and certainly the halves, really look to him, you know, and his leadership. And I think Proctor's probably his earlier years at the Titans, I think he was, you know, he didn't quite get a chance to show those leadership qualities because they weren't a particularly fucking great side. But now that they're actually putting something together, he brings a lot more to the table than what I'd previously given him credit for. So
I reckon it's Holbrook. I mean, I thought he was absolutely fucking cooked.
Proctor?
A couple of years back, yeah. And then, but then Holbrook come in, and it seems like he's pushing him even wider, and he's giving him this, you know, free reign to, you know, throw offloads and do whatever the fuck he wants, and he's loving it.
Yeah, no, they're I don't know, the Titans are, you know, they're starting to get some, you know, some crowds back to the games, and they're playing some entertaining footy. Fifita is a genuine superstar, and genuinely one of those guys. Whenever he touches the ball, you can see the opposition like, oh, fuck. You know, it's a bit like Luai for Penrith, or, you know, there's a Munster, those sort of guys. When they actually get their hands on the ball, the opposition wants none of it.
It really is a situation. Yeah, those guys, we talk a lot about, Nate mentioned, cunts forgetting how big they are. And, you know, rugby league's a mental game. As we discussed last week, nowhere near as much as it is physical. You know, there's no crippled geniuses playing rugby league. but Fifita really does seem to be understanding his potential a lot more, but also understanding the effort that needs to come with it to unlock that potential. For a long time, he was, yeah, well, I'm big and I'm strong and I'm going to get these results, just not even trying. But you can see that he's thinking about his football a lot more. And then the rest of the team are just such good role players that they capitalise. And for example, like people like Thompson, he is the ultimate role-playing outside back. You know, he understands that my job here is to do four things really well, and every time I get the ball, I'm going to do those four things, you know, absolutely sensationally. Or I'm always going to be attentive for breaks here, and I'm going to be positioned absolutely perfectly for what goes on. And the Titans are starting to live up to that potential that a lot of people thought they had at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, at this stage, I mean, I don't rate them as highly as they'd like. I mean, they're definitely very, very improved, but I still think, I mean, while you've got like Corey is fucking reliable as a finisher. Herbert looks pretty reliable as well, based on what he's been up to, but especially in the last game. But so much of it just comes through Fifita,
yeah,
and Tino and Proctor, and so. I think that does sort of paper. I think it is papering over the fact that, you know, halves still aren't quite there yet. And I mean, even though it's, yeah, sometimes even for, it seems like they even have a bit of trouble getting Brimson involved as much as they want him to be.
Who?
As well, you know that guy. What's his name? Fucking Alexander Branstone.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
What do we think?
I believe he tried to play a State of Origin for Queensland once.
Yeah, okay. On that note,
if I'm not mistaken,
what a fantastic segue! What a fantastic segue! Did you see the article the day after this game? Ponga wants to form like an Origin dual threat with Brimson. Like Kalen.
I didn't see it. I saw them. Space docking with each other on the sideline after the game, but I didn't see the article, no.
So Kalen Ponga has come out and spoken about how he wants the Origin fullback position to go between them and this.
Okay.
Making the fucking assumption that it's his over Blumpkin anyway. For fuck's sake. What do you think of his return?
Wasn't happy.
Mm.
I mean, he scored a garbage time try, didn't he?
Yep.
His kickoff went out on the full, which is what put the Titans in with the Proctor via the Peachy offload, yep, almost immediately. He almost sent another couple over the sideline, or like close enough to be caught on the sideline for future kickoff. So he kept pushing that envelope. He was trampled for at least three tries
and absolutely fucking stepped. And had his ankles broken on more than one occasion.
Mm. Well, it's like you saw me treat though. Like I tweeted about you can't call it breaking someone's ankle when the person whose ankles are broken doesn't even fucking attempt to change direction.
Yeah, true.
Like, he was just literally. It was just like he just accepted the circumstance. It wasn't like he tried to throw it in reverse. You know, he was just like, oh, okay, you got me. Run around that way.
Biggest issue I had with his game was, you know, the smirk and the cheeky grin and a wink and a point to the crowd when you're down by 30 and you scored a try in the last fucking handful of minutes. Fuck out of here with that shit.
Was that to the crowd though? I think that was all part of that. That was all part of that Brimson thing, wasn't it? It was like they were having a personal duel and he was like, you know, I got you that time, oh, sort fuck of thing.
There you go.
I think that's what it was. At least cares. That's what I think the commentary was talking about. Yeah.
Well, this guy cares. At Devonhead on Twitter said Knights have really missed their number one fullback in Tex Hoy today. This Ponga kid has done nothing except beat fat AJ Soprano in a race. At JR_Buff said, dick soft, send Dasani. You poor man, stay hydrated. At Return of the Warden said, imagine letting a player the caliber of Fifita go. Wouldn't be my club.
It's true, not mine.
At MitchG343 said Fifita gave Ponga his donga, hashtag hype train derailed. And at Queenslander22 said, has Corey Thompson always been this good? How awesome will the Titans be when they get Ash Taylor's $1 million back and can buy someone good? Mm. At Hammers said, it would be nice if we could do it to a good team, but beating up on the dregs of the comp is good for confidence and what the Titans need to do to make it into the finals. Hashtag thrun through. Hashtag fuck the Broncos. Jesus. And in our Facebook group, Hamish said, Fifita toying with Ponga. Last time a Titan did that much damage to a Novocastri and the taxi was running and some cat blood needed wiping. Cody said, I didn't realise the Knights' injury crisis was so bad. Poor guys have pulled their fullback from under 16 B grade with that defence. The first grade experience will do him well. And our mate Danny John said, injuries my ass. They turned up with nothing and got the beating we deserved. O'Brien needs to be slapping some faces Tommy style tonight. That's it.
Okay, the Melbourne Storm, 52, defeated the Bulldogs, 18. The Storm's 52 came through tries to Kafusi, Pappenhausen, Hughes, Welch, Kamakamika, Jennings, Olam, Adokar, and Nico Hines. Pappenhausen, 8 of 9 conversions. Dogs, 18, came through tries to Luke Thompson, JK Averillo, and DWZ, and Flanagan, 3 of 3 conversions.
Pappenhausen also, 1 of 3 tries. You're a fucking bum, Pappenhausen.
Although he did, on aggregate, defeat the Bulldogs 20-18.
What about my multi?
Yeah, I tell you, this was a very, very, very disappointing performance by the Melbourne Storm. What the fuck does any club, what business does any club have allowing the Bulldogs to score points?
Yeah.
What a difference Luke Thompson made, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right, dude.
The energy levels that guy brought to the table for them was fucking night and day from some of the stuff we've seen. Yeah.
Dogs fans will say that the Dogs showed something of a fight despite being hopelessly outclassed, but I think it was more about the Storm losing their clinical edge once the game was in their keeping. And, you know, Bellamy no doubt has probably got some family members tied up in the basement making sure that won't happen again.
Yes, he probably does.
He expects the standard to stay consistent for 80, and that's been the recipe for the Storm's success for many years, and that performance against that quality opposition just isn't going to cut it.
Although on the plus side, it does make the Bulldogs the first side officially ruled out of the
premiership
2021
race.
NRL premiership race. Given that despite PVL's best intentions, the first side to concede 50 this year.
There you go.
We had to get 40 games or, you know, close to 40 games into the season.
There you go.
You can have a turn if you want, Jared. You have something to say, mate? I was so fucking... I have not been... I mean, I've seen some shit that's made me angry this year in football. But I tell you, I have not been fucking as angry as when the Bulldogs scored that first try through Thompson. That's probably the angriest I've been all season so far.
No. We had on Twitter, Pivalandi's Anon said Storm should give back their titles that are stripped, and then stripped of all their titles and be cancelled from history to acknowledge that the Bulldogs score any points in 2021. What frauds.
Word.
Here's an interesting one. Harry Grant. The best player at the West Tigers is the worst player at the Storm.
Says who?
How's that?
Makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. At Devonhead said, Harry Grant seems to have tigered the Storm. Hashtag Tigers in decline. At GT351 underscore Johns said, Storm are hard to stop when on. Too classy and strong. Some better signs for the Dogs. Thompson and young Jackson made us much better. Just need to cut out the shit defensive lapses and play with some confidence. There you go. At JSJ Hogan. The result was never in doubt or even the margin, but the amount of fight that the Dogs did have will give us loyal fans some hope of improvement. Yeah, that's it. At Geo underscore Ute said, game didn't go completely as expected, but still frothing that Pappenhausen will be in a Blues jersey. Hashtag fuck the Broncos. There you go. And Lee in our Facebook group said, knew we wouldn't be able to hold out this attacking powerhouse full of attacking superstars for the whole second half. Well, at least they can laugh at themselves. That's it.
I was going to say, but I mean, it's genuinely touching to think that a human of right mind can walk away from a 52-18 defeat hopeful because it was a better improved showing.
You'd be surprised what you can convince yourself of.
I imagine the human mind is a powerful object.
Well, just a think powerful of, instrument that think can of be the way you recapped Manly's performance against the Warriors. That's about the level.
That was a win.
That's about
that was a win.
Yeah, but the quality of play, that was about the level of mental gymnastics that Dogs fans are doing.
I think anything about that Manly performance was positive. Oh, it was fucking incredible.
There you go. See?
And not only that, you came over to my place the next day, and an eagle was soaring majestically above my house. And then it flew over and started doing, like, you know, smaller concentric circles around the neighbor's house as well, just as a sign that the fucking eagle's back. And you know very well that you're like, oh, yeah, that's an omen. It's a sign.
That's it.
And you agreed. And let me tell you, you are a much more pleasant human when you're in the company of your lovely lady than you are when I...
Aren't we all, right. Nathan? Aren't we all?
No, I'm the same guy I was. The Roosters, 26, defeat the Sharkies, 18, in a fucking astonishing game at times. Bemoz, 2 tries. Hutchinson, Tupou, and Sam Walker also with tries. Takeaho, 3 of 5 conversions. The Sharkies, 18, tries to Hirodi, Kennedy, and Jack Williams. Townsend, 2 of 3 conversions and a penalty goal. And looking at the line score of this game, you'd think, yeah, the Roosters are down on troops. But, oh, my God, the Sharkies have got this stigma attached to them that they can't beat a side that's in the top 8. Hasn't happened for fucking, like, some extraordinary length of time.
Yep.
Over a season. This one, they had it in the bag.
In the bag.
In the bag. Couldn't lose from where they were.
Apparently they're good.
And then once they lost the lead, then they conceded the fucking a dagger after that as well. This game actually reminded me a lot in the general flow of it. It reminded me of the games that the Roosters had against the Panthers last year, where they were just throwing fucking everything at the death, but just couldn't quite get it. Except this was like they could get it. It was the same sort of frantic desperation in the last 10 minutes to, you know, anything to get the points, except it came off for them in this case.
Mm. It's one of the more enjoyable things I'm seeing about the fatigue, if you want to call it that, being prevalent in the game. You know, yes, we've had some blowouts, but there's also been these instances where, you know, it really is the team that stays in the contest for the full 80 minutes that comes out of it. And it's almost as if there are fewer instances where teams feel out of it. In previous seasons, if you were 18 points to nil up, then you could pretty much play managing football and manage a game out with a 3-try lead against a lot of teams. Whereas now, things like those unquantifiables, like energy and effort and the expansiveness of youthful football, count for so much, especially in late game stages. And those young Roosters halves just absolutely out-efforted the Sharks. Now, for the first probably, you know, 3/4 of this game, the Cronulla Sharks were playing so fucking far above their station. Mm-hmm. It's you know, one of those classic ones where no one's told them that they're not supposed to be a contender.
Yep.
And they got out there, they were tough, their defense was excellent, they were up in the face of the Roosters, they really fucking rattled them. They targeted their experienced players. But then it was just that experience that came back and got the Roosters home. And it was guys like Bemoz who he equaled the record for the most amount of tries over the opening 5 rounds, which is a fucking obscure, you know, record. But fuck me, what an effort though. Was it 11, yeah, I mean, 11 like, in like, 5?
How good is he going?
Yeah, it's crazy. Put historical leaderboards aside.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care who he drew level with or who he beat, you know, for that mark. You just look at 11 fucking tries in 5 games. Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
At 50 years of age. Fucking
at least.
Can we give his wife a $15,000 diamond ring? Is there something for that?
I'd give J-Moz his wife one at the same time, just in case you can't, you know, you see the women with them and you go like, oh, which one's which? I don't know. Just, I'd throw a 15K ring on each of them just to be safe.
There you go.
Why not?
There you go.
You can
because we like them, so we better throw a ring on them.
You can exactly see the hype starting to build around young Sam Walker, and rightfully so. I think he did some more good things in this game, but I think it shows the professionalism of the Roosters club compared to other clubs that are prone to putting their players on a hype train. The rest of the team are actually going well out of their way to shield him from yes. it. And I made the comment last week where they can actually go a set without him as the seven touching the ball. It's all, you know, steered around through the back rowers and through the dummy half, and he can, you know, take a set to take a breather and collect himself and go again. And not too much is expected of him, and it's a sign of the culture at the Roosters and the professionalism, as is the way they. I honestly thought, and I'm happy to admit that, based on the last couple of weeks, I was wrong, but I was expecting the Roosters to fall off the cliff once Cleary went down, and they haven't. And, you know, they continue to perform and win despite those critical players, you know, Jake Friend as well, being out of the side for the rest of the year and Friend's retired. So they're travelling okay. I know they've got games against some high-quality opposition to get through as well, but, you know, they're travelling quite well given the circumstances.
In our Facebook group, Ben said, you reckon Johnny Morris has found an old dusty box of peptides in the shed? On that note, interesting news today, and we'll, you know, obviously be official by the next time we record, but looking to get the arse, Johnny Morris. Mm.
Fitzgibbon looking at a 3-year deal to coach the Sharks from next season.
So was that like some bet for this game? The Roosters win, Fitzgibbon gets the job.
Timing is beautiful.
Yeah,
when you think of it that way. But I feel that Morris is a little bit hard done by. I think he's actually done great things with the squad he has at the moment. Much to my surprise, probably much to Sharks fans' surprise as well.
Yeah. And especially when it was a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how many new coaches have come into the NRL and really been put in a position where they were set up for success, and how many of them are still around. And he's probably the only new coach in the last little while. He went from an assistant's role straight into a head coaching role.
And, before he was ready.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, he didn't take that team to the finals. They were a team that was a grand final winning team on the decline, so you would expect them to make the finals a couple of times as they slink back towards their natural state of being irrelevant. But you know, he's done a better job than a lot of people have assumed. So, Mitch said, "Fucking tough to take that as a Shark supporter. Well played to young Sam Walker." Troy said, our forwards lacked punch. Two players short on the bench and reshuffles cost us. I wish I could see the silver lining. Well, you know, improve your fucking tackling technique. Tell you, I fucking wish I saw that more of that. Like, if you've got a tackling technique, that means you swing your arm and whack cunts in the head.
Yep.
Do you know what people say? You need to change your tackling technique so you don't give away penalties. If you have a tackling technique that's involved in you getting fucking HIA'd out of games every 3 weeks, you need to change your tackling technique.
Mm-hmm.
Stop tackling cunts of hip bones with your face and work on the basics that they teach you in under sevens. Ben said, fuck that, Chook 7 can throw a nice pass. Good to see a young bloke doing well, even if he is on $1 million a season already. In paper bags. Yes, he is. John said, the Roosters spend so much time grooming their young and dodging tax audits, they should relocate to the Vatican. at Sharks RCB said, Chad Townsend let a schoolboy beat him. That's it. And Super Grover, the last one on this one, said, stand up, Sam Walker, the most appreciated of all the walkers that are playing footy. There you go.
And that's right. Full time for our episode.
It's that time of the week again where we talk about the North Queensland Cowboys 34 defeating the West Tigers 30. The Cowboys 34 came through tries to Tabuai Fidoh, a double to Talangi, Scott Drinkwater, Condon and Lachlan Burr also with tries, Valentine Holmes 5 of 6 conversions, and the Tigers 30 came through tries to Dane Laurie, David Nofaluma, Luciano Leilua, Luke Garner, Tommy Talau, and Joe Hoffangawe. Dewey, 3 of 6 conversions. Glenn, take it away. Oh, no, actually, just wait. note to future Nate. Take a soundbite out of the last episode where Glenn was talking about how guaranteed this victory was to the Tigers and how they always, yes, always beat the Cowboys in Sydney. Sorry, now continue, Glenn.
Can we have an inspirational track? Like, can you play St. Elmo's Fire behind it?
I don't have the fucking energy to do it, but can somebody take a screenshot of both of your fucking faces right now? It's, if this was any other circumstance, I'd be so happy for you. You both look just overcome with joy. It's delightful, you pair of cunts. Look, I think it remains to be said, and you know, never a truer word has been spoken than the words that I so humbly uttered last week. But you know, these are the type of losses you have to have when you always beat the Cowboys in Sydney. The stage, Tommy's death, the stage was set for an all-time Hall of Fame level bed shitting, and the Tigers certainly didn't disappoint. They were fucking atrocious from the first couple of minutes, where Noffa was horribly exposed by, you know, clearly there's not a lot of film watching, because I can't even begin to pronounce his surname, and I apologise. I wouldn't do it justice. But the guy's fucking quick. Even if you can't pronounce his name, you know he's fast. And Noffa gave him 10 metres, 10 metres of space on the outside, and yes. And thought... And it was almost like Noffa was saying, "Don't you know who I am? I'm fucking David Nofaluma.
I deserve to play finals. I'm a top five winger.
You ain't run around me. Get the fuck out of here." You know, I find it extremely frustrating, to say the least, that I have to come here and listen to you two fuckwits, and all I ask is that these fucking cocks run out and have a fucking dig. That's all I ask. And I'm sure that's all any Tigers fan is really asking. Some of them ask for some ridiculous shit on Twitter, and I find it highly entertaining. But you want to see your team have a dig. Everything was there. It was Leichhardt. It was a packed house. They were playing for Tommy. They retired his jersey. In the end, no one, barely anyone turned up. There was, Laurie had a dig. Moses Zumbai had a dig. Garner in patches. But, you know, the comeback, and it should never have got to that situation. We've owned the Cowboys forever, and to let them come into Leichhardt Oval on a day where the entire club should have been motivated, and every player that pulled on that jersey should have been motivated to get out there and play for Tommy's memory and his legacy and everything it meant in front of a packed house at, you know, what they keep saying is it our spiritual home at Leichhardt. And it was fucking atrocious and embarrassing. So,
yeah. What's your take on
Tommy?
The jerseys?
You definitely don't die for this shit.
What's your take on the jerseys? As in, wasn't it announced they were going to wear the Magpies jersey?
No, they were going to wear the Magpies inspired jersey as black jersey. And then everyone was like, "Why can't you just print like the old Masterton Holmes or the Victor fucking V jersey?"
Well, why can't you go down to fucking Peter Wins and buy I'm 17 of the cunts?
Let's not forget, they've got to provide their own strapping tape in that place.
Yeah, the old fucking Harry the fucking high density housing building cunt to fucking shout him 17 jerseys.
I don't have an answer for that. I'm sorry, Nathan. But really, just me coming back this season, and then you have things like that, like it's just the universe saying this is what this podcast is all about. The universe just lines the planets up and the planets look like a couple of large testicles and you guys take five-step run-ups and fucking kick me in them. That's how it works.
Yeah, I thought this season was working out beautifully. Like, it looked like the Tigers finally turned the corner and then Glenn comes back and then he gets the chance. You know, you can fucking ride the Tigers' side on the way up this time instead of the way down like, you know, previously. And can I just say it's so enjoyable that that's not the case.
The issue I have with the Tigers is when does it become apparent? You know, every time for the last week, every time somebody's said one, in my head I'm going, "Don't mess with the radio." Had some fucking classics on in the car this week. At what stage does it become apparent that it's the actual fundamentals of the game that they're lacking in? They're unfit. Their handling's atrocious. You know, things like staying a straight line in defence. Is anyone talking to Madge saying you need to dumb it down? You need whatever you are trying to plan or whatever master strategies you're trying to dictate, bring it back. Tell this cunt that the winger is not supposed to be inside the centre.
Do you know the thing that kills me is that this team and these rules and the way that the rules play out with, you know, fit teams, you know, and full of running, all the rest of it, are the teams that are going to be at the top. Michael Maguire was run out of South Sydney because he trained them too hard. I don't think there's any danger that he's going to get run out of Concord for training these cunts too hard because, fuck me, James Roberts, he barely broke into a jog.
Although I don't think when you're talking training, I'm not sure that the sort of training they were referring to was, you know, intense cardio or high impact interval training to give them more endurance. I think it would have been, you know, run this fucking decoy run block play 1,000 times until you get it exactly right.
I'd take a defensive drill like that and have him run out of Concord for overtraining them defensively at the moment.
But yeah, it's some rather poor showings in some basic parts of the game. On Twitter, at Bethany_B_97, said Luke Brooks should lower Tommy into his grave so he can let him down one last time.
That's an old one, but a good one.
At Swiss_Cowboy_78. So the Tig Pies honoured Tommy with reopening the Noffa Highway and playing like he coached the Magpies. Luke Brooks' passion while presenting the jersey mirrored Noffa's passion for defence. The near comeback just proved that it is indeed the hope that kills you. another one from at Return of the Warden. I blame Real Dad for saying we were certainties on the pod last week.
Fucking talk about turning on your fucking brothers. How dare you?
At Jared_Hunt said, there you go. The team really is a bottom four side. Crushed what hope I had left. Ryan in the Facebook group said, so not only did the Tigers shit the bed on the day to honour a legend of the game for New South Wales, but they do it against a Queensland team. If you want to kick a team out of the comp, here is your prime candidate. My bunnies wouldn't have fucked this up. Yeah, there you go. You're now worse than Souths. How does that feel? Fucking hell.
I already knew we were worse than Souths.
Joshy in the Facebook group said, at Glenn, what's that, Real Dad? We always beat the fucking Cowboys. Ha 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 ha. Jordan, oh, Glenn, what was it you were saying about this game being a lock? Justin said, look, I'm the first to say this was unexpected, but fuck. Suck my dick, Real Dad, you tiger-loving cuck. And last word on this one goes to OG Shunter. Said, I can't remember the last time I didn't just expect the West Tigers to shit the bed in a big spot like this. Any hint of expectation is kryptonite to them and has been for ages. Perfectly summed up.
And finally, the game that's just recently finished with the St. George Illawarra Dragons, 26, defeating the Eels, 12. The Dragons tries through Jack Bird, Mikaeli Ravalawa, and a double to Matthew Dufty. Lomax four conversions and a penalty goal. The Eels tries to Isaiah Papali'i and Clint Gutherson. Moses, two of two conversions. Well, well, well. How the turns table. Glenn.
I think Cooks brought Matt Dufty back from the dead. He was really out of sorts and out of the side more often than not when Mary was there. And despite his obvious talent and speed and the Dragons' obvious need for someone with talent and speed in their side when Mary was coaching them, he just couldn't join the dots. But Hook seems to have instilled, got the confidence back into him, and he's back to some quality form for the Dragons, and he fits that side. I don't know that he's the same player in any other side in the NRL. He just seems to fit the Dragons and the club and their style of play, and it brings out the best in him. So Griffin, he's got a lot. He's had his share of detractors, but what he's actually doing with this Dragon side is pretty impressive. And the way he's got them playing a pretty basic style, but, identifying what strengths they have and their points of difference as a football side and bringing them to the fore. And they did that today. They took it to the Eels, and the Eels, they couldn't cope with it. And I think when the Eels were put to the, when the heat was put on them, they capitulated, and Mitchell Moses has had a bit of that in his game over the years. And I thought, certainly a bit last season and the way he started this year, I thought, there was a new maturity in his game that could overcome that. But there was more signs of that coming to the fore today than there were of him putting it to bed. So the Dragons in the end defended their way to an impressive win. And there was some ordinary looks there for Parra today. And, it's only 1 week, and, they've got a chance to right the ship next week. But there's some signs there that I don't think Brad Arthur would be overly keen on.
One thing I did like about the Dragons, you talk about how they defended their way to the win. They actually took advantage of the new rules beautifully, whereas Parramatta, they would have, under last year's circumstances, they would have delivered Parramatta so many sets attacking their line through penalties and just piggybacks downfield. But given the new six again situation, they didn't give a fuck. There was like Daniel Alvaro just like fucking laying on cunts on tackle zero for as long as he fucking wanted. And they go six again. Yes, so right, and just do it again and again, and every time that they needed like their guys, they needed to set their line just a little bit. Fuck, they did not care about giving away repeat sets. Even down there, even when they're defending their own line, I was like, it was great to see. And if the referees are never going to penalise you for doing it, or even call it a professional foul, because it seems to be only a professional foul if it happens on the end of a long break.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and you guys need to get back. So it's exactly the same thing as a professional foul, except it's not considered as such if you're just doing it in just a standard like zero tackle on a plot.
Do you think that's the next evolution of the for the referees, that that's when they bring a clamp down in a third of the way through the season, that okay, now you're going to end up getting 10 in the bin? Because you can see
Dragons did it better. Yeah, Dragons did it better in this game than I've seen any team do it all season. Mm. And I think every team's going to take note of it, and every team's going to do it. And
adapt or die.
Some teams do it like the Storms. The Storms sort of do it. They'll do it like early in a set, And like I've seen the Eels do it like in previous weeks. They'll do it if they're pinning someone on the line. But doing it just like as an actual established like habit to defend, to defend a lead. It was great, and teams will get so good at it that it'll become something where they're like, look, we've just got to fucking, there's got to be like a penalty at the end of this if they, there's some sort of facility for them to do it.
The thing that stops that is tries.
Well, yeah,
and the thing that I guess forced their hand tonight was that Parramatta were fucking woeful and weren't taking advantage of the advantage that the six agains were supposed to give them.
Yeah.
Whereas mostly, if you see, how many times do you see a six again given and then points come almost immediately after that. So, okay, there's the advantage taken. There's a try for you. It's a similar thing if there's the professional foul and they award a penalty try, they're not going to send someone to the bin as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The benefit you took out of that was a try. So I get what you're saying, and I think that if we do see repeat infringements without points going to the other team, we will 100% see more players going to the bin.
Yep. Because, I mean, sometimes you only need to do it the one time just to set your line, and then you're set for that set, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's and, it. And just because you can see that, you know, you're about to concede 20 metres off this fucking next hit-up because your guys are everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like it's a great fucking strategy that I support 100%. And you know, if it's in the rules, fucking do it.
Yeah,
and I wish you the best of luck with it. Yeah,
that's it. From our Facebook group, Zoran said, "If it means I have to join a far right supremacy group to ensure the Dragons keep playing this good, then sign me up." Hashtag One Nation under Griffin. our mate Peter Smith said, "Parramatta undefeated. How do we fix that? Bring in Cartwright."
Oh. Yep.
Tell you what, as much as I detest anything to do with Parramatta, and as much as he became a fucking absolute actual danger to people's health and safety with his anti-vaccine country, why is it that I still feel sorry for Bryce Cartwright? Like when he came on tonight and had an error almost straight away, which, you know, thankfully got overturned with a challenge, but
Westie blood runs deep.
Yeah. Why did my heart sink a little for him? You know? I don't know. Maybe.
On the flip side, if he had a blinder, would there be, you know, just a ever so slight twinkle in your eye going, yeah, fuck. Don't mind, you know, everything he's been through, don't mind seeing him do well.
That's it. You know me, I'd prefer to light a candle rather than curse the darkness.
That is horse shit, but please continue.
But, yeah. That's it. Ben said, "What an effort from the Dragons. Strong from Lomax and Rav, especially in defence. Some big hits put on. The Urban Samurai holds his neck as soon as you touch that filthy top knot. Hashtag Willie Army for the wins." There you go. yeah, Lomax was fucking huge tonight, especially in defence.
I really rate him, eh?
Like some of the hits he put on Radradra, just body to body. As in, you know, like that fucking, what's that movie? Godzilla and King Kong. Just two gigantic cunts hugging each other. Fucking great.
I'll tell you, and you know, we used to have our fun with fucking old mate Ravalawa. He's like legitimately the primo Fijian monster winger now.
Correct. Which, if you look at the development of some of those players, that's what you want. Yep. It's pure athletic ability that gets them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a similar journey that Vunivalu had
when
he came in, that it was just pure athleticism that got him his start. And then it took Bellamy a while to actually get the subtleties of the game ingrained there. And
it's like they throw them in the side saying, fucking, you guys try and tackle this cunt.
Yeah.
And we'll bring the rest up to speed.
That's it.
Whilst you're figuring that out.
Exactly. Yeah. Which again, just points out how fucking stupid I was when I pointed out that it was as much a mental game as a physical one. Because it's fucking not. At P. Valandis Anon said, "Fuck 11 years in a row. I'm up for the 1,000-year-in-a-row Rugby League Reich." Jesus Christ. At @geo_ute. "I'd prepared myself for a horrid season. I had the therapist lined up. Up the Dragons, Dufty, Lomax, and Ravalawa sensational. Hashtag fuck the Broncos." And at @jbartley90 said, "Parra didn't want to roll their sleeves up and match the Saints' intensity early. Then the pressure of the clock and the scoreboard got to us in attacking zones, and we shat the bed in all facets of the game. Pass me the Mars bar. I'll take it from here." And at @appayipyip44 said, "Well, split my dick and call me Caitlin. A dominant defensive win over a premiership heavyweight. Either Hook is one of those Nazi scientists the US stole in the 40s, or Mary is one of the shittest coaches in the modern era. You decide." Oof, I don't know.
The only decision I have is that I would caution Dragons fans that this is not like it's some kind of resurrection of the side. It's a restoration to normalcy.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason the Dragons became the meme for the choking and the rest of it is because you should be up near the top of the table by the end of, like, you know, the first month or so of action.
Mm.
This is, the Dragons are back to where they normally are. Come and, yeah, let's see what happens by September and see where things are situated. And then we'll see. Although, look, I mean, I do love the this win by the Dragons. Actually got them into the top four.
They did.
And so it's fantastic for me, because as a Manly fan, I say, well, look, the only sides we've lost to this year are the top four sides.
Mm.
So, I mean, it makes us clearly the fifth best side in the competition, you know, at worst. So looking good, looking at the charge home.
And technically Melbourne are now the worst side in the competition, because the Dogs are the worst side in the history of the game.
History of the game.
And Melbourne let them score 18 points. So that makes Melbourne at least the second worst team in the competition.
Agreed.
So, yeah.
Now that's some candle lighting that I can fucking get
behind.
There's
some fucking mental gymnastics for you.
And that's full time for episode 389. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can interact with us in a multitude of ways. To access our Facebook group and all of the other good stuff, just head to the site thisweekinleague.com and check out all our links on the sidebar, or Google Twill Nation Linktree and it'll be your top result. If you'd like to support the show, there's tons of ways you can do so, especially right now. Memberships and hoodies. Hoodies are pre-ordering at the moment. We are making them available to purchase until midnight next Sunday. So that's a week from when we're recording now. So that'll be the 18th of April. So that's when the memberships and the hoodie pre-orders are going to shut down. And it's great. I did fire a rocket up people about the hoodies during our last episode, and tons came to the party through the week. So that's fantastic. And of course, the easiest way to support the show, hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/TwillNation, where we've got a multitude of plans to suit all budgets, giving extra content, extra episodes, and much more merchandise, meetups, grand final weekend stuff, much more. Get on there and have a look. And yeah, we'd love to have you on board. And let's give a shout out to some of our wonderful patrons this week. Steve, our one-eyed tiger. A sad day for you to get, you know, improve your day. So, I mean, it's a sad day where with this episode brings you grim tidings. However, we love and appreciate you.
Paid for this.
We love your work and we appreciate you, and we love seeing you at the meetups and everything as well, and hope to do so again Magic Weekend. Perm, another long-term listener and great supporter of the show as well. Thank you so much for getting on board, sir. And finally tonight, Sam, aka the Angriest Tiger.
You picked these on purpose, didn't you?
I did. No. They joined sequentially at the period of time where I looked. So
you know what? I tell you what.
Pure fluke.
With those three, with Real Dad and One Eyed and Warden, it almost made me think that fan base wasn't an actual fucking just meme of society. Thinking that, you know, it's made up of just absolute fucking caricatures of the worst qualities in people. Thinking about those three individuals, I almost had to second guess myself there. But then I realized that they are exceptions.
I need to try harder.
They are exceptions. Yeah. And the rest of that fan base can suck a my dick from the back.
And on that note, that's all. That's all we've got time for this week. Last words, fellas. Any last thoughts?
No.
I'm glad this is over.
Wasn't so bad, was it?
It was all right.
Yeah, we were gentler. We were gentler on you than fucking RTS than was on Dylan Walker's anus.
Well, you know, it surprised me. It surprised me that
don't
the Cowboys,
fuck it up now.
The Cowboys cared more about Michael Morgan than West did about Tom Radonikis. That's just surprising. I make no judgment. I pass no comment. It's surprising to me.
And look, it's obvious. I mean, like, Tommy was a wonderful larrikin and character of the game. Obviously had his storied history, you know, Captain New South Wales. And, I mean, they're in the first Origin game. There are fucking things that you can never take away from Tommy Raudonikis.
Yeah.
Great fucking guy. But then that brings me to Michael Morgan. Architect of one of the greatest fucking moments in rugby league history as a neutral fan. The brainchild and driving force behind Fuck the Broncos. and for that, I mean, I said when someone put something about his retirement in the Facebook group, I said, look, very few players across the fullness of the rugby league playing community have the opportunity to win an NRL premiership. Fewer still have the opportunity to win a premiership and get balls deep into the Brisbane Broncos at the same time. Michael Morgan achieved both, and for that he'll always be remembered as a true giant of the game.
Mm.
And so yeah, I salute you. You did what so few of us, what all of us wish we could do, but so few of us could achieve. Hashtag fuck the Broncos.
And isn't that interesting that Luke Brooks gave a better tribute to Michael Morgan this afternoon by dropping the final kickoff
and tackling like he had a busted shoulder.
It wasn't so bad, was it? We were gentler on you than I expected. And everything that's happened after you said that has made it worse than everything before it.
Yeah. But don't worry. You're going to extend offer for 5 years because he kisses the jersey.
Yes.
He kisses the NRL logo on his jersey.
Yeah, that fucking
guy. He's such a fucking fan of the NRL.
Tell you what, if there was an organisation...
Tell me you saw that.
I had to go back and watch it because, like, I saw your tweet about it. I didn't see it. Like, I didn't notice it live, but then, like, because I kind of turned away from the screen when he fucking scores or you know, scores and it has it taken away. But
if yeah. there was an organisation that paid me hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to be fucking dreadful at something, I would crochet a tiny little cock and balls on that logo and I would blow it on live television. Fuck.
On that note,
talk to you on Wednesday.
Later.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.